Welcome to Watching Bloomington, brought to you by Buccetto's Pizza Pasta, with your host, Barry Lusso. Each week, B97 and Hoosier Country bring you stories about nonprofit agencies helping people in our area. Stay informed, stay involved, and stay tuned.
Welcome to Watching Bloomington, where each week we have the chance to hear from a community leader who helps make this a better place to live. And we're pleased to have with us this morning our good friend Emily Pike from New Hope for Families. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Denise. How are you?
Good. So you have some exciting things coming up.
We do. So we have been working for, a couple of years now to expand and relocate our services, and we are just about finished. So we're very excited. We have new facilities located at 1140 South Morton. So that's just at the corner of Morton and Patterson.
I'm sure you're going to be glad to see the bulldozers go away.
We are going to be glad to see the bulldozers go away. We've been really fortunate to partner with a great construction firm, but there are always little delays and there are always things that come up, and they've worked valiantly through the pandemic, and we'll be happy to take over that building from them.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you made there.
Yeah. So we are building an early childhood center for 48 young children and a shelter for 12 families. So that represents, right now we can serve 7 families at a time and 16 young children in early childcare. So what that means is that represents a 70% increase in our shelter capacity and a 200% increase in our early learning capacity. We're super excited.
It is super exciting. Congratulations on getting to this huge milestone.
Thank you. We're really excited about it. And as I said, just a couple more weeks of finishing up those last things in the buildings. Got some painters over there today. But we anticipate opening our new school later this month. And we anticipate opening shelter in early May. So we're very excited about that. And we're excited. We'll have a time to welcome the public to come and see these spaces as well, which will be on May 14th. Be an open house.
Oh, that's great. Now I'm sure people will be excited to see it. And now with the early childhood center, so you think too, it sounds like there's a big demand for early childhood spaces and you're in a great location.
Yeah, there's a tremendous demand for early childhood spaces. And, you know, our current program is nationally accredited, which means that we have achieved the highest level of quality recognized by the state of Indiana and in fact in the country. So we're accredited by the National Association for Family Childcare, and only about 6% of family childcare providers achieve that distinction. So that's something we're really proud of. You know, we wanna take this seriously. We don't wanna just be a place where people can drop off their kids and hope for the best. We wanna make sure that we are giving kids everything that they need, and recognizing that all children deserve very high quality care and education early in life.
And I would imagine there are a number of things that go into getting that high level of distinction.
Absolutely, yes. It's a very long process, and it's a process that takes the whole team. You know, so I'm working on it, but also our early childhood director is working on it along with all of the teachers there. You know, one of the things that we're thinking about right now as we expand is that we'll be hiring some teachers. So we're super excited about that. And we'd love to welcome anyone who has a background in early childhood or in education to apply for a teaching job. Those positions are posted on our website at newhope4families.org. So newhope4families.org. And that's where you'll find those teaching positions posted. We're really excited to expand our team and welcome some new professionals to this exciting work.
Well, that's always exciting. What age kids will people be working with? What do you serve there?
So we'll serve children from 6 weeks to 5 years. And as always, half of the children served at New Hope will be impacted by homelessness or poverty. And the other half of the spots are open to anyone in the community. So that's a really intentional mixed income cohort. And we do that on purpose because we know that learning outcomes are better for everyone when we create mixed income cohorts.
So for families who are experiencing the lower end of income or homelessness, do you have a sliding scale or how does that work?
Yeah, we work to help those families get connected to subsidies that they may be eligible for. We have a person on staff who is tremendously talented at helping families figure out what's going to be the best fit for them, best fit for their kids. So that's something we're really excited about. And as we look to hire teachers, we're always interested in teachers who are passionate about making sure that there's equity in early childhood. Mm-hmm. It's one of the places that we don't think about enough when we think about equity. Mm-hmm. But we recognize that these interventions early in life and this quality care and education early in life makes such a tremendous mm-hmm. difference throughout a person's lifetime.
And especially too, I've heard you talk before about how important it is to help the brain at that stage when it's young.
Absolutely, yeah. There are windows when it comes to brain development. And I am not a developmental scientist, but what I understand is that there are moments when children are primed to learn about particular things. And we understand that helping children proceed along a developmental path at their own timeline and according to their own needs is one of the ways that we help children become prepared for kindergarten. It's also one of the ways that we build confidence and help children feel excited about learning and about going to school.
No, it sounds such an important time. Now, along with your nest part, you mentioned too, you have your roof, your shelter. Can you talk
Absolutely.
About that?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, right now we can serve 7 families at a time in our facility. Mm-hmm. But you know, Denise, a few years ago, we made a promise to this community that we wouldn't let any family in our community sleep outside, live in their car, or be separated from one another in order to receive vital services. And I'll tell you what, this community made that promise right back. And they have been so supportive. So what that means is that our shelter is always full. And very often we have additional families that we've sheltered in motels somewhere. That is not the most efficient way to shelter families. It's certainly not the most cost-effective way to shelter families. So we're very excited to have a facility that will allow us to more fully meet this community's need for shelter for families. You know, when we think about shelter, we oftentimes aren't thinking about families when we think about homelessness because they tend to fly under the radar. But what we know is that on any given night, about 40% of people impacted by homelessness in our community are families with children. So being able to fully meet those families' needs means that we'll be able to help those families move through homelessness into a stability that we think will be lasting.
Mm-hmm. And you have a different philosophy on handling all that, don't you?
We do, yeah. So we follow a housing first philosophy. And Housing First is a nationally recognized best practice, and many shelters in our community follow a Housing First model. But Housing First essentially says the only solution for homelessness is a home. So there may be any number of contributing factors to homelessness, but the first and best thing we can do is help people get housed. And while they're housed, they can continue to work on any other issues that may arise. That approach has proven very, very effective for us at New Hope. We pair it with a voluntary services model, and a voluntary services model says we offer lots of supports for families, but they get to choose what they need. They get to choose their priorities and what's right for their family. So those two approaches together have led to a very high success rate. So in the state of Indiana, about 39% of people staying in homeless shelters move out into a lease that's in their name. Last year at New Hope, that number was 81%.
Ooh.
So we're very proud of that. And we have such a talented team of folks working on that.
That's a very high success rate.
It is. And it really is due to the hard work of the families that we serve, due to the supportive nature of this community, and due to the dedication of that team to implementing and following Housing First principles.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. How are you finding, you know, your families impacted? Because I imagine you work with a lot of working families. And what are you seeing now? You know, obviously things are pandemic piece is not the main news story anymore. We're really looking at the economy and gas prices and food prices and people going back to work. And how is that impacting the population, the clients that you serve?
Yeah, so I suppose there's a good news, bad news here, right? So the good news is that our families are having a much easier time finding work than they did a year ago. So that's great to see our families back at work. You know, there was a moment in early pandemic low-income folks are so likely to work in service or hospitality industries, and those were some of the hardest hit by the pandemic. So there was a moment in early pandemic when we didn't have any of our adults at work. But now our families have more access to opportunities to work, but we're also seeing that the money they're making at those jobs isn't going quite as far. Mm-hmm. You know, we recognize that we have a housing security problem in our community. We have a housing affordability problem in our community. Mm-hmm. And what that means, very, very difficult to afford a lease if what you're doing for your job is cleaning hotel rooms or waiting tables or something mm-hmm. along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Are you finding that our families having better success than finding jobs, but it's not necessarily enough to make ends meet?
Yes, I would say that's exactly right. So it's very, very mm-hmm. difficult to find an apartment that you can afford on, say, $12 an hour.
Mm-hmm. And especially if everything else, food and gas and things like that, are higher right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, we know that being able to get to work, of course, is absolutely crucial. And when those gas prices are high, that really does impact families. And it really, you know, so often the people who can least afford a change like that are the ones who are most impacted by it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would imagine too that with your Nest, affordable childcare will be a huge help to families who are struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah, you know, that's the whole reason we started the Nest. We started the Nest about 6.5 years ago. I had to do a little quick math there, 6.5 years ago. And the whole idea there was to help families. We recognize that one of the reasons families are so disproportionately affected by homelessness is that the cost of childcare is just so high. Mm-hmm. So you are, in fact, more likely to experience homelessness in this country in the first year of your life than at any other time. And very often we see that actually the birth of a child can be the catalyst for an episode of homelessness. And the high cost of childcare is a big part of that. So being able to help families get back to work, get back to doing the things they need to do to get their families on track, and also helping those kids have the good start that they deserve, that all children deserve, and be ready for kindergarten on the first day.
Mm-hmm. And not being ready for kindergarten can have really long-term repercussions as well.
Yeah, one of the things that we know is that when we don't do early childhood well, a couple of things happen. One is that kids can start out behind, and then they tend to stay behind. The other thing that can happen, the other thing that can happen if we don't do early childhood well is that we teach kids that they don't like school, that school isn't a place that's on their side. And that in some ways can be even more harmful. And so recognizing that providing whole child care and education, which means that we're just as interested in social and emotional health and development as we are in physical and academic health and development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. And you look too, everybody's been concerned about children being isolated right now and not mm-hmm. having that chance for social emotional development.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And you know, this is a good time to give a shout out to all of those early childhood professionals who did come to work every day, all pandemic, and worked under different conditions and more difficult conditions to make sure that the parents who could go to work were able to, recognizing that not everyone had the opportunity to work as much as they would like in these past several months. But understanding too that, you know, for too long, early childhood has been an underappreciated and underprofessionalized field in this country. And it is absolutely essential work. And it's time for us to really take that seriously as a community, because we cannot expect these folks to come to work every day in hazardous conditions and work so hard for these young children and not be making a living wage themselves.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's it. Yeah, no, that's an absolutely important point. Was it interesting for you, you know, with this perspective and knowledge of the whole field and having this global picture, being able to plan your new facility? What what sort of things were you able to incorporate that you think are important? And I know listeners can't see you, but you're smiling. So what about that was exciting for you in terms of being able to help shape that?
Everything about it was exciting. So we have been so fortunate for the past 10 and a half years to be the beneficiary of some really tremendous generosity on the part of at first Bloomington Hospital and then IU Health Bloomington and finally the city of Bloomington in these little houses that we lease on Second Street for $1 a year. So that was a tremendous way for us to get our start. But I'll tell you, the truth is trying to operate an early childhood program out of an 1100 square foot home is a trick. And trying to operate family shelter out of two separate single family homes is a trick. Mm-hmm. And having our offices in a different building is hard. So being able to design what we want and what we need was absolutely essential. And I have to say, most of the credit for this goes to my very talented team. So we have an early learning professional called Amy Stringer, who worked very hard to design our early learning facility. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely tremendous. I can't encourage people enough to come out on May 14th and see what we're building, mm-hmm. because I think it's gonna be one of the most beautiful schools in town. And we have a new early childhood professional, Ben Planton, who's joined our team to help run that program. Mm-hmm. And he and Amy are working around the clock to get that space set up and ready to welcome kids in just a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And then on our shelter side, Chase Teckenton is our shelter director, and he's a remarkably talented person who has really thought through every detail of the way that families use the space. You know, before we even began designing, we started watching. We started watching mm-hmm. how the families use the spaces that we mm-hmm. have now. And so, you know, small things. But for example, we realized that the families don't use the living rooms very much. And that kind of makes sense, right? If I'm there with my 16-year-old and you're there with your 3-year-old, chances that we all want to watch the same thing on TV are pretty small, right? Mm-hmm. But the space families use all the time is the kitchen and the dining room. And mm-hmm. so we have these big, beautiful kitchens and wide open dining rooms for families to really be able to congregate uh-huh. there, create their own sense of community. You know, some families really want to do collective meals and eat together. And some families really are feeling a little nervous about that and would like to keep to themselves. And so there are ways to set up that space to accommodate mm-hmm. everyone's individual needs. And that really goes right along with that voluntary services model, right? We want people to make their choices for their family, and we want to protect their dignity in doing so. Mm-hmm. And Chase did a fantastic job of thinking through what are the ways that we can make this space the most useful and the most impactful for families. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. And typical, you know, when you look at that, you know, you mentioned the different uses of space and, you know, you're trying to help people get stable at this point. How long would a family typically stay at the roof?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, we've seen those numbers be a bit longer since the onset of the pandemic. For mm-hmm. many years, our average stay was a little less than 90 days. Mm-hmm. And our median stay was closer to 70 days. Mm-hmm. So since pandemic, we have seen those numbers go up. So our average stay is a little over 90 days right now. We do hope that will go back down. Mm-hmm. But, you know, recognizing that the challenges to finding housing in this community, I think are more and more serious with each passing year. Recognizing that it is very, very difficult to find decent housing in our community, particularly if you don't have access to a car, right? And so you really need to be reliant on something that's on a bus route, you know, which eliminates a lot of housing in the county, which might be a little more mm-hmm. affordable. So recognizing that, we are continuing to try and find innovative solutions for families mm-hmm. to help them find a place that they can sustain. The last thing we want is for a family to move out into a home that they won't be able to afford long-term. You know, we've been doing this for about 10 years, a little over 10 years. And in that time, we've had 9 families circle back to us, which isn't very many. We feel pretty excited about that. But that's because our team is so careful to make sure that we find a sustainable solution for these families. So when we understand that, it really makes that challenge feel even more pronounced when we're trying to think about solutions for families and housing.
No, I think that's an amazing statistic, you know, amazingly low that you're able to help people be that successful when they go on to the next step. And I know your team work and you work very hard to do that. So congratulations on those results. Those are amazing.
Well, thanks. And we have, you know, like I said, such a tremendous case management team. But one of the things they do is they continue to follow families for 6 months at least after they leave, and our supports are available to families who want them for even longer than that. You know, sometimes we can offer supports while families are in a crisis and then allow that to fall off. And that's one of the things we never want to do at New Hope. We want to make sure that we're giving families the tools that they need to be successful long-term.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at that too, I mean, that's quite a testament to your approach and follow through. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, you look being able to achieve establishing these new facilities during this time period is amazing. And I think that really shows the community support that you have for you, for your team, for your model. And it sounds like a lot of people have stepped up to help you make this happen.
Yes, so many people, Denise. I can't even begin to describe it. You know, this was a close to $6 million project, $5.75 million. And we are, I'm proud to say, more than 90% of the way there. So we're still seeking some community support to help us wrap that campaign up. We do have an anonymous donor right now who is matching gifts to this project dollar for dollar. Folks are interested in doubling their impact. Now's a great time to make a gift to this campaign and to help us finish up this really exciting expansion of services in our community.
Wonderful. And if people are interested in contributing, talk a little bit about how they should do that.
Absolutely. If people are interested in contributing, the easiest thing to do is to go to our website, newhope4families.org. And there you'll find all kinds of links to donate. You can designate your gift, and you can let us know how you would like for us to use those dollars. But those dollars that are designated for the capital campaign, for the Growing New Hope campaign, as we call it, for the Growing New Hope campaign, will, as I said, be matched dollar for dollar by a local anonymous donor. And that anonymous donor has committed to matching gifts up to $500,000.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a tremendous, tremendous help. And, you know, Denise, we we began this campaign just immediately before the pandemic started. So it's been a little fast, it's been a little serious. And it's required a lot of flexibility on the part of a lot of people. But I'll tell you one thing that has been so amazing and humbling for us is just to see this community say, yes, this is something that we need. These are our values. We want to make sure that no family sleeps outside or lives in their car or has to separate from their loved ones in order not to do those things. And so, you know, it is such a privilege to be able to provide services like this in a community like Bloomington, because this is a community that is compassionate, that is thoughtful, that wants to invest in programs that show results and that are impactful for the people who need it the most. And even through this pandemic, watching individuals and families, watching corporations, watching foundations say, you know what? Times are tight economically, but we're not going to miss out on this opportunity to support such a vital service in our community.
Yeah. No, I think it's phenomenal, and kids continue to grow and develop even during times like that. So it's great that you're providing these services.
They absolutely do. And it's, you know, I think as we move out of pandemic, hopefully for now anyway, it's wonderful to watch our community sort of come back. And it's such a testament to everyone's resilience and to our community's resilience. But we see that most clearly in our kiddos, right? Mm-hmm. They're ready to be in school, they're ready to be playing, and they're ready to be learning and growing. And it's again, a privilege to be able to be a part of that and to have families share their time with us.
Well, Emily, I love your energy. Congratulations again on getting almost to the finish line with this great project. I hope that you find some exciting new staff people who want to become teachers in this wonderful facility. And good luck with wrapping up the capital campaign. And hopefully people will come out and see you on May 14th.
Thank you so much, Denise.
Yeah, and have a wonderful day.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, this has been another edition of Watching Bloomington, and we'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Watching Bloomington with Barry Lesso, brought to you by Buccetto's Pizza Pasta. For pizzas, calzones, Italian chicken dinners, and more than 50 gluten-free dishes, as well as vegan options. Visit them for dine-in or carry-out at East 3rd Street or next to Starbucks on West 3rd Street in front of Kroger. Order online at Buccetto's.com.